The Orange FM.
Welcome, Voltron fans. This is Mark Morrell, your host for Let's Voltron, the official Voltron podcast. I'm here with Mike French. How you doing, Mike?
Doing very well. I'm glad to be here again. So this is awesome.
Well, last week we had Mark Oliver, number one superfan, with us, and he made a request to us towards the end of the podcast. Do you remember what that request was?
Yes, he did. He requested that Bob Coppler, the VP of World Events Productions, come on the podcast.
Yes, he did. And who do we have today?
We have Bob Coppler.
Yeah. Isn't that awesome how that works out?
We work quickly, don't we?
Yeah, there was the one time when we had the fans asking for Dan Jolly, and we had him on. And now, you know, Mark Oliver asked for Bob Coppler, and we have him on.
Well, I think that speaks to the access that World Events gives its fans. I mean, this is great.
Right. I think this is awesome. So, without further ado, because this is the man that can give you everything that's going on at World Events Productions. The Vice President of World Events Productions, Bob Coppler.
All right, guys. Hey, first of all, I just want to say thank you so much for having me. After that nice introduction, I hope I don't disappoint. Mark Oliver is an awesome Voltron fan, and Mark, I thank you out there if you're listening for asking for me to come on. I didn't think you guys wanted to hear from me. You know, I've been tuning in and listening to your podcast, and I felt really offended that I'd never been asked to come on the show, but now I feel vindicated. So thank you, Mark Oliver, for requesting for me to come on. It's truly an honor. No, I'm kind of joking, but I really, truly have enjoyed listening to these podcasts, and the last one I listened to was with Mark Handler, which was just awesome. I mean, that guy's all into the anime these days, and he's just a wealth of information, and that was just a really fascinating interview. And, Mark, I know you've put a lot of work into these, and it's such a great gift for Voltron fans to have these podcasts. Michael French, it's been awesome working with you. It's been a short time, but you know, in that time, I think you've proven your skills in social media and keeping our fans engaged. We've been so lucky to have fans like you guys as ambassadors of the brand, and Mike just coming aboard and taking, you know, filling in for Jeremy and keeping everything alive on the social media, and it's just been. We've been really lucky. So thank you both for being such great ambassadors for Voltron and backing the brand the way you guys have. It's guys like you who really kept it alive. So I appreciate that. And of course, Mark Oliver, I appreciate your fandom, and you are truly, truly in the top echelon of Voltron fans. And we really do appreciate it, because it's the fans that have really kept us alive for so many years. And you know, it's humbling to see all the fan reaction to Voltron and you know, people being this into it after so many years. So thank you to all the fans.
I'm the first one to be able to tell you, Bob, that I've been a big fan since 84. There's tons of other people out there that have been big fans since 84. You have a worldwide following here, and we're trying to hit every single one of them.
Well, yeah, I really appreciate it, and one of my quests in this position is to identify what it is that's really allowed Voltron to stay relevant for so long. I think there's a lot of things, and it's hard to drill down on just one, but I did notice, well, we'll get to some of the fan questions, but I did notice one question in particular on Facebook that spoke to this, and I do want to read an email that we recently received, and Michael French saw this, but if you look on our Facebook, you'll see posted a tattoo of Voltron that a guy, I assume he's okay with us sharing his name, William Whitehead. He put it on his leg, and it's this huge tattoo of Voltron in the classic hero pose. But his the body of his email, it really struck me, and I'm just going to read it for you real quick. But he sent us this a picture of his tattoo for us to share on Facebook, and in his email he says, Voltron has been an important part of my life for many years. I actually think the first few episodes show how a people are affected by war and how good stands against evil. I wish cartoons today could teach us these lessons. I'm proud to share Voltron with my young daughter and to have him tattooed on my leg. Again, I wouldn't suggest all of you Voltron fans go quite that far, but it is much appreciated. Anyway, he goes on, thank you all. My tattoo will hopefully be finished in 2 weeks. And was done by a professional geek tattoo artist who loves Voltron almost as much as I. I hope Voltron's legacy reaches many new generations until we can literally say from days of long ago. What an amazing message. And I think he kind of identifies straight away, like, what was it about Voltron that's been so lasting? And it's really a classic story about good against evil. It's, you know, the Drool forces and Zarkon are some bad, bad, bad dudes. You have on the other side of that five heroes that literally, if they're not all five working on all cylinders, they can't defeat the enemy. It's a sum is greater than or the whole is greater than the sum of the parts type of story. And when you see all the lions come together and form Voltron and become an invincible robot, it's a powerful thing to see. And I think, you know, as a kid, you can't help but root for good over evil like that. And so it's the lasting power has been truly amazing. And again, it's humbling. And I consider myself very lucky to be working for this property. And all I can hope to do is do right by the fans.
Well, I think one of the things that Mark Oliver last week said was very important, too, to the whole idea of the lasting, you know, importance of Voltron, and that was that the fans themselves are keeping it going within their hearts and within the, you know, everything that they do, whether it be through collecting or the TV shows, reading the comic books, buying things off of Voltron.com and things like that. There's forums and there's ways for people to get together and just talk about Voltron. And then, of course, the conventions, right? I mean, you have lots of people going to the conventions to see Voltron.
Absolutely. And it's just so cool to see when we do a panel or something. When we put together our convention schedule and we look at what we want to hit and what we want to announce, you know, at times they're just, you know, we don't have a new series to announce and we don't have a whole lot new going on. So we evaluate whether, okay, is it worth being at this convention or that convention? And we think, okay, well, we might not have enough to announce, so I don't know that we'll get enough of a fan base here. But it's just remarkable to see, like, particularly the last one we were at in New York, and there were at least 500 fans just lined up outside the door to come talk Voltron with us. And that's really all we're looking to do with these is we want to have a conversation with the fans. We want to hear everybody's questions. We'll talk about what's going on with the brand in terms of her licensees and just chat with everybody. And they're a lot of fun, and we really, really do appreciate how well attended they are and everybody's engagement level, because it's fun. It's really invigorating doing those panels and showing up at the conventions and conversing with the fans.
Now, you have a new convention from St. Louis Wizard World Comic Con coming up April 4th through the 6th. Can you tell us what we're going to expect if you were to actually attend that convention?
If I were to actually attend, I'm unfortunately have other obligations, so I'm not going to make the Wizard World this year. I was there last year, and it's a fun convention. It's right in our backyard. It's here in St. Louis, Missouri. So, you know, we can't miss out in a convention going on right in our backyard. And last year was a lot of fun. We had a booth set up where we sell a whole bunch of Voltron merchandise. And then we have a couple of panels. One panel is on Saturday and one is on Sunday. The Saturday panel is just kind of a just Voltron brand panel where we'll talk about some of our licensees and we'll talk about the shows and answer fans' questions. And it will be moderated by our very own Michael French, this will be his first moderated Voltron panel, and I know he's going to do a hell of a job. So we're really happy to have him moderating our panel. So Jeremy, you've got some big shoes to fill, Michael and Jeremy, because he was quite a fan favorite. He was a big hit at the panels, but I know you're going to you won't disappoint.
I am not untried in the ways of convention panels. However, this will be the biggest thing I've ever done. So, but I'm looking forward to it. I have no stage fright. So,
no, I wouldn't imagine that you would. So we're excited to have you. And then Sunday, there's going to be more of a kids focused panel where we kind of explain Voltron and the mythology to kids and indoctrinate them into the ways of robot lions. And what better professor could you have than Professor Michael French, the master of all things 80s and all things animation, a person who is intimately familiar with Voltron. So it's going to be a lot of fun. My one gripe is last year we had our 10-foot tall Voltron statue right near our booth, and it was a lot of fun. It was a big attraction. A lot of people lined up and took pictures. I'm sad to say that the convention said they didn't have room for our statue this year, so we're going to have to see what we can do about that. But if you want to write Wizard World and tell them you want to see the 10-foot tall Voltron statue, feel free to do so, because we would love to have it there.
Why don't you just find a big pedestal and put Mark Oliver in his costume at the top of it?
Believe me, that's our backup plan. It's actually not too far off. That thing is incredible. Mark spent, I don't know how, I think something like 500 hours putting together this incredible homemade Voltron costume. And he had it on display at New York Comic Con, and I was just floored by this thing. It was absolutely incredible. So that would be a great backup plan, Mark. And I don't know, who knows, maybe we can do both.
At one point, Jeremy had talked in one of our early episodes about the fact that you guys were talking about doing a statue in St. Louis to signify that, you know, St. Louis is the home of Voltron. Is that still happening?
Yes, we are working on that. We have a giant, an even bigger statue. It's about 15 feet tall. It's sitting in a warehouse right now in a bunch of crates, and the size of these crates, I'm telling you, it takes up an entire room. But we're waiting. We're talking to a couple different people about the proper venue. There's one in particular that I think it's going to fit really well with. As soon as we can iron out those details, I'm hoping to announce in time for the 30th anniversary and get it installed. And so we'll have it on display this fall, and people can come see the 15-foot Voltron statue. It really makes a statement, though. If you went to Comic-Con, it was on display a couple of years ago at the Mattel booth. So it's just a really cool statue, and it's Voltron sort of in his blazing sword pose with his sword reared back over his head. It's a sight to behold.
Well, I can tell you, coming from Philadelphia, all right, Rocky was a big movie back in 1976. And after that, a Rocky statue was placed at the Philadelphia Art Museum, just like it was in the movie. And people from all over the world come to Philadelphia just to see that Rocky statue, you know, in addition to all the other things that happen in Philadelphia. But I can imagine a lot of people would just make the trip to St. Louis just to see your Voltron statue.
Yeah, it's funny. A lot of people are surprised when they hear Voltron originated in St. Louis. Well, I mean, originated in Japan, I guess you'd say, and then brought to the United States. And Voltron, I guess, originated in St. Louis, whereas Goliant originated in Japan. And, you know, Rocky is so distinctively Philadelphia that, you know, it's just such a part of the Rocky story. So, and that's why, I guess, when you hear Voltron from St. Louis, it takes you a little bit by surprise, because you don't think of St. Louis and think massive cartoon robot lions. But yeah, you know, in small independent company, here we are, World Events Productions, and that's kind of where the whole thing began. And yeah, I think it's a proud part of St. Louis history, I guess you'd say. We actually had the mayor of St. Louis. We have a little proclamation hanging in our office declaring Voltron like a local St. Louis hero, which is kind of cool. But yeah, we love, you know, integrating Voltron into a lot of our civic, you know, initiatives and making sure people realize that, yeah, St. Louis is the home of Voltron. So it's kind of a point of pride here in the Midwest.
Well, in the interviews that you and I have done previously, we had talked about some of the early days when you were a kid. And, of course, you got to experience everything Voltron from being the son of Ted Koppler.
Yeah, I did. And let me tell you, it was a great thing. I mean, I can remember him. And I was very young at the time. It was 1984. I was five. So World Events, before the time of Voltron, had just been doing kind of like reporting pieces. Voltron was the first animation that World Events got into. But before, the namesake of the company is a show called World Events 80. And it started in 1980, where they covered events of international interest that occurred around the world. Like, one was the Paris Air Show. They covered like the it would have been the 40th anniversary of the D-Day invasion. So there was a young Bobby Costas was one of the reporters. So that was kind of an interesting show. And stuff like that was sort of the focus. And the purpose of World Events was to create programming to be put on KPLR, which is a local TV station, which was an independent station. And being an independent station, you're not supplied with, you know, hours and hours of programming from a network. So you have to find a way to program it yourself. And if you put a program on the air in St. Louis and it does well, what you can then do is syndicate it around the country and give it basically to other independent stations for airing. World Events was able to do that successfully with a couple of shows. There was another one, Kickboxing, that they produced, which was pretty successful. And then they, in 1984, for some crazy reason, branched into children's content. Voltron was something that I got a nice pre-screening of. Just loved the show when my father brought it home and showed it to a young five-year-old. I just went gaga for it. You know, the rest is history, and it started to air on TV here in St. Louis and then around the country and then soon later around the world. And, you know, as a kid, like I got a pre-screening of it, and of course I saw all the episodes and I loved all of them, but it was hard to like understand the depth of the success that this show took. And, you know, as a small St. Louis company, it took us by surprise almost in terms of all of the licensing that went on surrounding it. I mean, you know, back in those days, these days, kids programming is a business that thrives on licensing and merchandising, and everybody knows when you make a kids show, sort of the upside is that merchandising business. Back then, it was, we try to make money by putting it on the air, and if you break even, you're lucky. By syndicating it around the country, we hope to make your money back by collecting license fees from television stations and other markets. But then this whole licensing business just took us by surprise, and lo and behold, Voltron toys were selling like crazy, and, you know, not only toys but apparel and bed sheets and you know, all this other stuff. And it just, we had no idea what to do with all of this. So we just scrambled to get together merchandising partners and signed all these merchandising deals. And, you know, it was this huge thing that hit us all at once, sort of. And, you know, as a kid, again, it was hard to understand the real scope and breadth of this whole thing and how big it had actually become. Just, you know, it was like an overnight sensation once it hit the air. So it was definitely exciting times, and let me tell you, I was one of the more popular guys, you know, at the playground, because I could get an early copy of pretty much all the toys. You know, I had all the Lions. I had that great Castle of Lions playset. I had like all the greatest stuff. So it allowed me to make friends. You know, I was a shy little boy, and being growing up Voltron, it really did enhance my popularity at school. So I do appreciate that factor, and I was a very lucky kid for sure to be kind of in the middle of that whole Voltron wave. So quite exciting.
So after the the initial first few years there that Voltron was on the air, and of course the broadcasters got to show it for 4 years, 125 episodes, right?
That's right. If with the vehicle and Lion, it would have been 125, 52 vehicle, 52 Lion, and then we World Events produced originally 20 new episodes of the Lion Force. So it was 124. Yeah,
it ended up being 124, right?
Right.
And what happened in those years for you after, you know, those 4 years that Voltron was on the air, and where were you headed?
After the 4 years it was on the air, so what are we, late 80s, early 90s? I was in school, you know. To be honest, like, kind of just came and went really quickly, you know, like the Beatles. it was a shorter heyday than you think. I mean, it was really popular on the air for a year or maybe 2 years, and then so much other stuff started to flood the market. There was probably a pretty significant period where it just wasn't a huge part of our life. It was like, okay, it was a big thing while it lasted, and then it just kind of, you know, went quiet. And then
you had moved on to other things like Saber Rider and Denver the Last Dinosaur.
That's right. Yeah. So, I mean, when we say me, I mean, it was the company World
right.
Event, and I was still a young kid at the time, but yeah. So, but they did pursue, other animation. Saber Rider was a show that they did with a company called Perot out of Japan. Wonderful folks over there. And we're actually working with them again, with the show, and, looking at what new things we can do with Saber Rider, because that show also has a great and loyal following, not quite the size of Voltron, but it's there nonetheless, and we do want to keep that brand going and alive. And then Denver the Last Dinosaur was also a successful show that they created in the syndication model, similar to Voltron, where they just sold it into independent TV stations all across the country. Yeah, it's a really, really sweet story about a bunch of California teenagers that find a young dinosaur, the La Brea Tar Pits, and they're charged with protecting Denver and taking care of him. And it's sort of the adventures that ensue when you have a bunch of teenagers and a dinosaur. And that show did great, and it's kind of remembered for this really infectious theme song that opens it up. That it's been fun seeing a lot of interpretations on that theme song being done on YouTube from all over the world. Really, it's been cool seeing sort of the global following of Denver, and we're looking at actually doing some new stuff with Denver as well. So we're sort of doing all we can to keep all of these brands alive from the small office in St. Louis that we occupy.
Right. So let's find out a little bit about what you had done to position yourself within the company. You got to the part where you wanted to practice law.
Yeah, it's the greatest case of nepotism that I could possibly hope for. Consider myself lucky as can be to be working on all of these great brands. And yeah, to be honest, I never saw myself here. I went off to college. Actually, my first year in college was when Voltron the Third Dimension was released. You know, a lot of work was put into that show. It was ahead of its time in a lot of ways. It was actually the first CGI series to be made completely in the United States. And we did that in partnership with Netter Digital. And I enjoyed kind of watching that from the sidelines, but I wasn't involved at all with the production or with any of the deal making or anything. I was just entering college at the time. So I went to college, went to law school after college, began working at a law firm in New York City called Olshan Grunman, doing securities law for the most part, you know, drafting S-1 registration statements for public companies, doing mergers and acquisitions. It was all just transactional work, but gave me a good solid foundation in, you know, contracts and you know, business law sort of issues. It was from New York City where things kind of started to happen for Voltron again. It started to build a lot of momentum just through the nostalgic fan base that it had. And studios started to come calling about doing a live action movie. And of course, we were very interested in pursuing that. And so there were a number of conversations that we had with producers and studios. My father hooked me in from around that time. He began calling me and asking me to take a look at some of the contracts that were offered and weigh in on the negotiations for a feature film. And, you know, I provided what little advice I could at the time as being a young attorney. And but it began really to interest me, and I started to dive into to back into Voltron, because I'd been away from it for so long, and I've just like, it just really began to hit me just what a precious property that we have, and what great things that we could do with it. Just really excited me, and I have Jeremy Corey to thank for a lot of that, because, you know, he would really get me excited over the property, and he was such a fun guy to work with, that, you know, I did a lot of conversing with Tim from New York City, and of course Tiffany Ilardi, who had been handling all of the licensing and merchandising for so many years. Working with both of them kind of from afar was something I was having a lot of fun with, and it got to be that it started to consume so much of my time that I figured, why not move back to St. Louis and do this full time? Because there's certainly plenty to keep us busy full time with Voltron alone, let alone some of the other properties that WEP had in its portfolio. So left the legal profession. I guess you could say I left the legal profession. I left the law firm and joined World Events sort of as in-house counsel / VP of business legal affairs. And started looking at ways that we could grow Voltron and began working on studio deals. And soon after coming back to St. Louis, put together some deals that would enable us to produce Voltron Force, which was just a hell of a lot of fun. It was, you know, a lot of hard work went into that show, and you know, we put a lot of effort into it. I'm proud of the 26 episodes that we created. So it's been a really fun ride. I can definitively say I enjoy working here at World Events more than working for a law firm, you know, where I had to keep track of every 6 minutes of my life to know who to bill for it. That aspect of the law firm job just wasn't a whole lot of fun. It's been really wonderful working here in St. Louis. And like I said, it's really the best case of nepotism that I could possibly hope for. And like they say, nepotism's a bad thing unless it's you. And so I'm very, very, very fortunate to be in this position. And I'm certainly surrounded by really, really talented and great people that made Voltron what it is, and continue to put their passion and energy into the property and, you know, keep it relevant today. So it's been a lot of fun.
Okay, Bob, this is actually Mike's question. He dropped off for a second. Obviously, anybody would jump to take a job like that. I can totally understand why you would. What was the secret thought going on in the back of your mind when you walked into these offices for the first time, in the sense of your father started something amazing with his creative team, and now you're there to carry on the legacy? Was that intimidating?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. I would just say I had so much support from Jeremy and Tiffany that, you know, they welcomed me and made me feel at home, rather than, you know, they could have looked at me and said, oh, here comes the boss's kid, what a jerk. But they didn't. They're very open and just willing to work together as a team. And the fact that I had been sort of doing stuff on the side for several months before officially joining the company kind of made it a natural transition. In a lot of ways, it was easier just being able to come into the office every day and do a lot of the same things that I had been doing remotely. No, I mean, I think thanks to Jeremy and Tiffany and, of course, my father and the support that they gave me, it made it pretty easy to come in and to hit the ground running, sort of. But, you know, there was a lot of I guess if anything was intimidating, it was I really felt like I had to have a grasp of the genre and the material. And while I was familiar with Voltron, I didn't know a whole lot about anime. And a lot of, you know, the other things surrounding Voltron and sort of the sort of fanboy culture. And Jeremy, like, literally put on a university for me so I could sort of get caught up and learn to speak the language of a lot of our fans. And, I still feel like, there's so much to learn from our fans. And I do, every time I go to a convention, I hear from them and I learn so much and I really value their feedback and input. Yeah, there was definitely a little bit of a learning process getting back caught up with anime and Voltron, sort of its lineage and where it came from. But it was all a fascinating lesson, and believe me, it was way more interesting than doing legal research.
Tell me a little bit, Bob, about. You spoke briefly at the beginning about the way the landscape of children's entertainment has changed. I was wondering if you could apply that learning to what you deal with on the web side of things now, as far as what is the landscape looking like for web for all of its properties? How has the game changed for you guys, and what are some of the benefits and what are some of the hurdles you're running into?
It's definitely gotten a lot tougher. Especially for independent producers. I think you're going to find fewer and fewer independent producers in the children's category just because of how strong the competition is and how, you know, just how many shows and properties there are out there. And they're all backed by these really giant media companies that have deep pockets and enormous platforms to showcase these properties on. So it makes it difficult. Just for example, when Voltron first came out in 1984, like I mentioned, the way we did it, we put it on an independent TV station here in St. Louis, KPLR. It aired typically at that time you had network affiliates, and then you'd have one or two independents in the market, and the independents would typically air kids programming between the hours of 3 and 5 p.m. when kids would come home from school. That doesn't exist anymore. There's no independent stations airing children's programming. Children go and watch cartoons on Cartoon Network and Nickelodeon and Disney Channel. And there's only a handful. I mean, there's not a lot of buyers right now of kids' content. If you don't have the backing of a major network, it's going to be difficult. I mean, you have to rise above the noise of all the different things going on in order to get noticed, and you have to reach a critical mass of viewership. And part of the challenge we had with Voltron Force, to be frank, is we aired on Nicktoons Network, wonderful network. We loved, they were great partners. We loved working with them. But part of the challenge was they didn't reach the mass level of children that a Nickelodeon reaches or that, you know, Cartoon Network reaches. It wasn't as widely, you know, shared as it wasn't like the show that every kid was talking about, because you had to go find it. The kids that found it, I mean, we got just this wonderful reaction from the kids that did find the show, and they really truly loved it. But you know, you have to somehow reach a critical mass, and there's very few locations where where you can get that mass level of viewership. What's also changing in a huge way is the emergence of Netflix. How many kids you can reach through that platform? It's amazing how many kids watch Netflix exclusively. And if you look at what DreamWorks is doing, they're releasing shows direct to Netflix. There's a great show that they just came out called Turbo Fast, based on the movie that came out last summer, and it's doing great. Kids are finding it, and but that's a whole other medium that didn't exist as little as 5 years ago. I mean, I guess it existed 5 years ago, but it's really come into a place where it's a viable release. All on its own, just direct to VOD. I mean, Netflix is doing that. They've proven with House of Cards and Orange is the New Black and a number of shows that that they can do original programming. And I know other VOD platforms like Amazon Prime and I think was it Sony PlayStation that just announced that they're now doing their own original content, and they just announced a brand new show that they're doing. So The media landscape is changing so much. It's not just kids' content. It's the entire media landscape that's shifting like crazy, and it's challenging to figure out where it's going. I think it's going to lead to a lot of opportunities, but it's certainly led to challenges as well. And you know, I mentioned with Voltron Force, being on Nicktoons was wonderful. But it probably wasn't the level of exposure that would have been required. And the other side of that, we have to look domestically as well as internationally. And when you create 26 episodes of content, the only way to make it work from a business standpoint is to introduce it into a number of foreign territories, because you know, just success just in the U.S. it's not enough anymore. So. What we ran into on the international front is there was just a ton of content that was being pushed at the same time that was all backed by big media companies and by big toy companies. And while we had Mattel as a toy licensee, it wasn't a toy company show per se. Like, for example, Transformers is a toy company show. It's owned by Hasbro. They can push that and use all the muscle of a $1 billion toy company to secure valuable clearances in countries like Germany and France and the UK and Spain and Italy. And, you know, we were up against a ton of pressure from other properties and toy companies, and international broadcasters would ask questions like, okay, when's the toy coming out? And then we'd have, you know, the toy company saying, well, what are your clearances? And so we didn't have, it was kind of a chicken and egg thing. And it made it difficult to secure the key clearances that we needed to get in certain foreign territories. There were a number of territories where we did get some really good clearances. You know, in Australia, we got a great clearance. We got some other really, really good ones. But the competition that we came up against in the United States and in the international realm was just incredible. And we really did see the market actually start to shift between the time that we went into production and the time that we went out to sell it. It just that's how quickly the kids television landscape is changing. And let me just tell you, I mean, our target market of you know, boys, mostly boys 6 to 11. It's brutally competitive. It really is. And, you know, I think we made a great show. I'm proud of the show we made. Like I mentioned, a lot of people put a lot of their hard work and effort into it. And Jeremy Corey spent many sleepless nights making sure that every frame of animation was as true to Voltron as it could be. The two of us, you know, from St. Louis worked our butts off and had a great team in Vancouver working on it, in L.A. and overseas. It was a fun project. In a lot of ways, we had some really great successes with that show. But I think it was that stiff competition that we ran up against that made it really difficult to get into second season.
All right. So, Bob, you were talking about how you were focusing on the boys 6 to 11 range. There's a ton of female viewers out there that have been watching this for many, many years, and some that are older now and are still following Voltron and Voltron Force and everything you have with it. Do you find it harder to market towards females?
That's a good question. You know, we have a lot of great female fans, and we do have, the princess is a wonderful character that I think little girls can look up to. In the original series, Princess Allura was, kind of a dainty princess, and she was always being babied, and, she'd be crying all the time, and she was definitely, like, the least skilled pilot of any of them. And in Voltron Force, we made the princess more of a warrior, and she was a kind of person that wouldn't take any crap from anybody, and was one of the better fighters of the group. And then young Larmina, who was her niece, was sort of this ninja warrior character who would beat the crap out of the guys. We felt it was important to have an aspirational female character. And, and I just think that's more in line with modern thinking and modern cartoons. So we welcome a female audience. We definitely do have one. And when I said our core target market is boys 6 to 11, I think just because by nature of this show, it's an action-oriented show, you tend to get more male viewers than female viewers. It's, not on purpose, but that's just who tends to watch these action shows. Female-focused shows tend to be structured a little bit differently. They're more about kind of relationships, probably, a lot more humor. But I don't know. I guess there's something about a giant robot with a giant sword that slashes Robies in half that you tend to get more boys attracted to than girls. Even though there's a number of girls that watch, and we do appreciate that, and like I mentioned, have characters that they can look up to. It just these tend to be boys centric shows. They tend to attract a wider boys audience than a girls audience, and that's just kind of how it's traditionally been.
Okay, Bob. So now it's time to turn the podcast over to the fans. I know you had seen some of the questions that were posted out on Facebook when we announced you were coming on the podcast. First, I want to handle just that big movie question, since there were so many people that just asked that question. I'll just start with that.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's always the first question we get at conventions, and that's what fans want to know about. And believe me, I want to see a movie as much or more so than anybody out there. And that's been our really number one focus. It's been fits and starts, I'm not going to lie. But it's typical of the Hollywood development process. Sometimes projects take a lot longer than you hope to come to fruition. And we've been through, a number of producers and some different writing teams, and we've had some really interesting and really great takes on it. We just haven't found, that the right exact fit for Voltron. We're still working on it every day. Let me just say it's a matter of when, not if. And unfortunately, I can't give a date for the movie, but it will happen. We've got a lot of intelligent minds working on that. I wish I could snap my fingers and make it happen. I really do. But when you look at what it takes to get a movie made, the challenge we have with Voltron is Voltron's not a $20 million movie or even a $50 million movie. It's a huge movie, and it's over 100 probably. And if you look at how many movies of that size get made every year, it's a handful. It's only a handful. You have to have a studio basically go all in and say, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to risk our studio on this, because if you have a movie that size come out and it flops, it can have a huge negative impact on a studio, and it's just a big risk for a studio of any size. And studios look at Voltron and they say, yes, this could work. It's just a matter of when this is going to happen. And a lot of pieces have to come together. You have to find a filmmaker, the right key stars, and they all have to be available at the same time. It literally has to come together like Voltron, all these big pieces. just because we all know that a Voltron movie can be successful, and the fans see it for what it could be, and you know, I share that vision, and I know that it's going to happen. You just need to get these key pieces in place and make it happen. And if you look at what had to happen to get a Transformers film made, you know, a lot of people said Hasbro was crazy for saying that you could make a movie out of a toy like Transformers, and they made it happen, but so many things had to come together for that movie to be a reality. Steven freaking Spielberg came on board, and if that hadn't happened, you know, it's unlikely that we would see the Transformers films that we've seen today. You know, I think movies like Transformers have proven that there's a thirst for the kind of movie that Voltron can provide, but it also makes us it puts us in a position where we have to differentiate Voltron from Transformers, which I think fundamentally we can. I think it's a different kind of a property than Transformers, and I don't think it will be difficult to differentiate.
I think the other thing was Pacific Rim, because it had giant robots that were actually piloted by human pilots, right?
That's right. Pacific Rim was even closer to Voltron than Transformers. You know, I saw that film and I was just like, I was in awe of it. I think Guillermo del Toro just did an incredible job of that film and making those monsters look real and lifelike, and capturing the size of those giant Jaeger robots was just incredible. And I was just sitting there thinking, God darn, this would make such a great Voltron movie. But I still think there's room to differentiate. I think we can. I think he raised the bar on what a giant robot film can be.
Sure.
But I still think we can surpass that. And I think that has to be our mission. The bar gets raised every year. And so, you know, my hope is that we come out with a Voltron film that shows audiences something they've never seen before. I mean, that's what we have to do. So it's becoming more and more challenging every year as technology's evolving, and, you know, audiences have seen so much these days, it's hard to, wow them with anything truly new and unique, but, that's our goal, and that's the mark that we have to reach with Voltron. But I definitely think it's doable, and the mythology of Voltron as a property is just so interesting and so deep that I think just naturally it's a different kind of story than any of the movies that we've seen so far. And if we adhere to the brand and maintain the DNA of the property, I think we can come out with something truly spectacular, and I know that we will. So bear with us, I guess, Mark. I'm really sorry. I wish I could give you a date. I know this is probably not going to make people any more you know, satisfied than they were before, but I guess just take my word for it. We're working hard toward that movie, and it will come out eventually. And I hope to share some more definitive news in the near future on that.
All right. Well, we look forward to it. The fans have put together a big list of questions for you here.
I think I just answered 80% of them, Mark.
Right. You did.
Or didn't answer them, depending on how you look at it.
Well, how we're looking at it is we'll have to stop here to conclude part one of our interview with World Events Productions Vice President Bob Koppler, and next week we'll conclude the interview with part two, which will include Bob's answers to all the great questions submitted by the best fans in the universe, Voltron fans. Join us next week for part two of our interview with Bob Koppler, and don't forget, the first big convention celebrating the 30th anniversary of Voltron is coming up soon at Wizard World St. Louis. When fans come together to celebrate the Defender of the Universe, there's only two words they need to say to get the party started. Let's Voltron!